This is Fresh Air. The BCCI story is enough to make your average conspiracy freak seem rational. The Bank of Credit and Commerce International appears to be the largest corporate criminal enterprise ever. It was the place to bank if you were a terrorist, arms dealer, drug baron, or if you were running a covert operation. Its list of clients included world leaders, intelligence agencies, not to mention the Medellin drug cartel. But this bank also had an activist wing, a so-called black network that initiated arms and drug deals of its own and made offers that couldn't be refused. My guest Jonathan Beatty is one of two reporters who broke the story of this black network in Time magazine. The BCCI was seized in early July by international regulators, but Beatty says the black network is still functioning. One of the services the BCCI offered was to help dictators loot their country's treasuries. I asked Beatty how they did it.
Let's take the case of Noriega. Noriega had BCCI set up accounts for him under the names of the Panamanian National Guard, the Panamanian Security Forces, and even one particular account for the Panamanian National Treasury. Those are governmental accounts. But then BCCI would transfer that money to dummy accounts held by Noriega in London, thereby siphoning millions of dollars out of the country and into his private pocket. And presumably, BCCI gets a handsome cut of this. That's how they made their money.
Can you give us an example of how drug traffickers use the BCCI?
Well, the clearest example is actually pretty well known, Terry. When the customs undercover agents first stumbled across BCCI, clear back in 1986, they were laundering, in a sting operation, they were laundering drug money. And BCCI bankers, and they put some through BCCI in Miami, and the bankers came to them and said, "Hey, you guys, we can tell that you're laundering money, and we're not going to blow the whistle on you. What we're here to tell you is that there are a lot smarter ways to do it than you're doing it. If you want to work with us, we'll show you how it's really done." And then they literally took the drug money, which was really being handled by the undercover agents, and ran it around the world, made it disappear in various accounts, and then loaned it back to the agents again through regular business banking loans, so they had some legitimate answer for why they had the money in their hands. That's what they were doing for all of their clients. They not only made your money disappear or got it out of the country for you, and they also dealt in the movements of cash and gold, which is generally illegal. Anyhow, they just had wondrous ways to again, more than just launder your money, but legitimize it. They would set up companies for you so that there was some paper trail to authorities showing you had some quasi-legitimate reason for having the money.
How much do we know about how American intelligence agencies used the BCCI?
Well, all this is just now coming out, Terry. What we do know is that the CIA used the bank for various covert accounts. We have been told by U.S. government sources that the DIA maintained a slush fund, which is different than just having accounts that, to pay for operations. By slush fund, as we understand it, we're being told about something that's off the books, off the reservation. Words that we heard back from Iran-Contra. Our sources, Time Magazine sources, who have been affiliated with the bank's so-called black network, its clandestine arm, have told us that they worked closely with the CIA, with the Mossad, and with other intelligence agencies they actually got into the operations of moving arms and money and supposedly, reportedly, drugs around the world in conjunction with different agencies. They claim, the members do, the former participants, that they actually went out on virtual training exercises with the CIA in Pakistan. So there's a lot to get to the bottom of here.
Now, you broke the story of the BCCI's black network. Give us a synopsis of what the black network did.
The Black Network, as it's explained to us, is about, it's still in operation, about 1,500 people strong. It operated out of Karachi, Pakistan. When I say it operated, it was the orders came out of there. They had agents, their own agents around the world. It's more and more appearing that BCCI was less a bank than a purposeful front for a lot of other activities. And the Black Network people were the ones in the bank responsible for running these other activities. Heavily into the international clandestine arms trade. BCCI acted as a broker, financier between, for example, countries that didn't want anybody to know that they were selling arms to one another. But BCCI would also move these arms. They had a shipping company, a huge shipping company that they controlled. So they were really acting as a full-service bank.
My guest is Jonathan Beatty. He's covering the BCCI scandal for Time magazine. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Time magazine reporter Jonathan Beatty is my guest. Can you give us some examples of the kind of operations that the Black Network ran, its own drug and weapons and currency deals?
Sure. The Black Network appeared, as we understand it now, to get more and more powerful within the bank. And we're told clearly that it used bribery, extortion, blackmail, even murder, to further the ends of the bank and increasingly perhaps to further its own ends. But they would kidnap people, I mean, and hold them to ransom, so to speak, for commercial ventures. They told us that they sought to extract military secrets, industrial secrets, and banking and commercial secrets from people that they would try to get into their power. They would follow people with private detectives and learn everything about their lives so that they could step in and either lure or seduce somebody into betraying whomever he worked for, or they would use blackmail to do it. We really haven't seen anything like this in the commercial world before. And in some of these activities, it said that they were working hand-in-hand with some agents. They traded favors and information with intelligence agencies and thus bought themselves a lot of immunity.
So the Black Network used killing, extortion, bribery to get information it wanted and to get clients it wanted as well?
Sure. They would begin putting money into somebody's bank account with electronic transfers, hundreds of thousands of dollars, as just an introduction to somebody that they wanted to, I use the word seduce again. They wanted people in power on their payroll. The modus operandi of this bank, and the Black Network was the instrument of this, was to achieve control or at least immunity in every country that they operated in, and they were in 72 countries. They made deals with leaders of countries, with the top politicians, sometimes with the presidents or the dictators directly of the country. In the United States, they bought their way into the United States. They have given former President Carter at least $8 million and perhaps much more than that, under the name of contributions to his charities and to his library. And you can see this pattern repeated throughout the country. When they wanted to open a branch in India, they created a huge philanthropic award that Mrs. Gandhi could administer, and lo and behold, they got the licenses to. Anyhow, you can give examples of this everywhere.
When they give $8 million to, you know, former President Carter's philanthropies, does that mean that Carter necessarily knows who they are and what the BCCI is about? Or did they maybe just want to associate themselves with a former American president to help themselves look good and legitimate?
Well, when they started associating themselves, he wasn't a former American president. The BCCI insinuated itself over the objections of American banking regulators into the United States during the Carter administration. And They used Burt Lance as their spearhead. They bought the National Bank of Georgia from Burt, using a dummy front to do it. And then, of course, later turned around and bought what became First American Bank, headquartered in Washington and run by Clark Clifford, as part of their hidden expansion into the United States. It is true that money that went to Carter did not go to Carter until after he was out of office, but it was almost an instantaneous transformation. It is as if President Carter gave up Air Force One day and then started flying about the world in the BCCI's largest corporate jet the next. One other thing to say is that we've tried to talk to President Carter about this. He's always been very defensive of Hassan Abedi, the founder of the bank, and their relationship, their friends. Now, Abedi had a vision of a third world bank that obviously appealed to somebody's with President Carter's sensitivities for the third world. But we tried to talk to Carter about it, and he would not talk at all. And one of the questions we had is, why did he continue to take money, or his foundations continue to take money from Abedi and the bank after the bank was convicted of laundering drug money in the United States? A question that's still not answered.
You broke the story of the BCCI's black network. How did you get onto that part of the story?
Old sources, I would say. And what it was I met with Jack Blum, who is the former special counsel for the Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee on Narcotics and Terrorism. That's Senator John Kerry from Massachusetts committee. They were the first ones to come across BCCI, first ones with a public orientation that came across BCCI and the American government. And to make a very complicated story abbreviated, Jack Blum found some BCCI officers who were willing to talk and arranged that they talk while being taped by U.S. Customs and IRS and the U.S. Justice Department were all there to hear these revelations. And the bankers, this is in 1988, these BCCI bankers talked in specifics about how BCCI really secretly owned First American Bank and that Clifford was their lawyer. And they talked about drug dealing and they talked about many, many payments to American politicians to further their ways. These tape recordings were bottled up by the federal government. They never, ever appeared again. There was no action taken on them. Jack came back from this rendezvous with the feds to find that his job had suddenly been eliminated and he was no longer special counsel to Kerry's committee. And he waited for something to happen for about 6 months, and he finally despaired that the federal government was going to do anything. He traveled to New York and told his story and what he knew to Robert Morgenthau, the district attorney of New York, who just this week has indicted BCCI. And shortly after that, Jack met me and told me what had happened to him and the disappearance of the evidence. And that was the beginning of the story as far as Time Magazine was concerned. That was in February.
One of the things I find almost amusing about the BCCI story is that all these enemies were kind of banking together. You know, you've got, like, possible clients include Israel and the PLO and Saudi Arabia and Syria. You've got Colombian drug baron Saddam Hussein, Ferdinand Marcos, Manuel Noriega. You know, it's like the whole political spectrum, shopping, you know, banking together in the same place.
That you've just now, Terry, absolutely defined why the bank existed and why it had so many customers. The people in our government, somebody in our intelligence community pointed out to me the other day that this bank formed an indispensable role in Middle Eastern intrigue and really intrigue around the world. Lots of people found a use for this bank. And that usefulness, by the way, was maintained only when all of these people, including our government, managed to keep one hand over their eyes, so officially they didn't have to see this bank and what it was doing, because they were using it too.
Jonathan Beatty is a reporter for Time magazine. He and S.C. Gwynn broke the story of the BCCI's black network in the July 29th issue. This is Fresh Air.